Welcome to a podcast of How Authors Can Help Students with Disabilities, presented by Sandra Ho and Tamara Rory. Sandra Ho is the manager of the Student eRent Pilot Project, an initiative led by the Alternative Media Access Center in partnership with the Access Text Network and CourseSmart. Tamara Rory, Esquire, is project coordinator of the Student eRent Pilot Project. This podcast was recorded at the 2012 Text and Academic Authors Association Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. TAA is the only nonprofit membership association dedicated solely to assisting textbook and academic authors to enhance the quality of textbooks and other academic materials by providing them with educational and networking opportunities. For more information about TAA, visit www.taaonline.net.
Hello and welcome to our session. We're going to be presenting how authors can help students or individuals with print-related disabilities. My name is Sandra Ho, and I'm the project manager for the Student eRent Pilot Project. And this is Tamara Rory, who will be filling in for Kevin Chow, who is going to be co-presenting but couldn't make it today. Tamara, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Tamara Rory. I've been calling myself Camera Tory since I'm filling in for Kevin Chow. So. But I am the compliance manager with the Alternative Media Access Center. And the Alternative Media Access Center is an organization based out of Georgia Tech that provides books for students with print-related disabilities in alternative format. That's one of the several things that we do. As I said, I'm the compliance manager, and we got involved with a project called STEP that you'll be hearing more about, and I manage that project, so that's why I'm here filling in for Kevin.
So this is our session overview. Basically, today we're going to be talking about accessibility. We're going to provide you with a demo of what is accessible and what's not accessible. We're also going to talk about what the role of authors is in making your work more accessible to students with print disabilities. We'll also give you, as Tamara mentioned, an overview of the Student eRent Pilot Project. And we also will provide you with some resources that you can take away with and kind of check out after the presentation. And then we'll take some questions throughout the session. Now, in 2008-2009, there were almost 21 million students who were enrolled in undergraduate school. And this was, again, 2008-2009. Of that number, there was almost 11% of students who had reported disabilities. So that's roughly 2.2 million students who had a reported disability at that time. Now, this pie chart is a breakdown of percentages by disability. So as you can see, 31% is LD, or learning disabled. 18% ADD, ADHD. There are, as you can see, several other types of disabilities. When we're talking about vision, such as visual impairment or blindness, that's a 3% enrollment rate for those students. Now, Tamara's going to talk about what assistive technology is and explain what that is.
Okay, so assistive technology is basically any technology that assists a person with a disability, and we are specifically thinking in terms of print-related disabilities, but any technology that assists a person with a disability counts as assistive technology. Students who are learning disabled use a lot of assistive technology, and it's been fairly recent. And when I say fairly recent, I would say within the past 20 or 30 years that disability has really been acknowledged and that a lot of research has been done on that disability. And what has happened is a lot of the assistive technology that people who are blind or visually impaired use has been adapted for people who have print-related disabilities. And the reason for that is that with those disabilities, generally those are cognitive disabilities that affect people's ability to, they see the print on the page, but they don't, there's a brain function that keeps them from really understanding it. Sometimes they can hear it and understand it better. Sometimes they need assistance hearing it, and then they need something where they can have it highlighted while they hear it. So they use some of the same technology that people who are blind use. Many of you may know that people who are blind use screen readers to read their computer screen, and I'll be demonstrating some of that in a few minutes. We use, you know, recordings, audiobooks. And now with the advent of computers and with the technology as it is today, we can use e-books, we can use, other devices that are mainstream for accessing our materials. And what, as I said, what has happened is the LD population uses things like PDF Aloud, which is basically an adapted version of JAWS, or, you know, various pieces of software that are adapted versions of the screen reading technology that people who are blind use. The technology that people who have learning disabilities use would be technology that reads the screen to them, but also highlights the screen so they can follow along with their eyes and gives them the added ability to hear it and see it. So it allows them to have both the visual and the audio. And, you know, if they are having a problem with visually being able to understand and use that material, they get the audio, which gives them the right words, and then it helps them adapt. Now, when you're talking in terms of print and information for people who have disabilities, there's accessible information and there's inaccessible information. So an image that is scanned is going to be an inaccessible piece of material. Many people think that if they give you a PDF and you're blind, that you'll be able to just read that PDF, and then, you know, because you can use your computer and your screen reads what comes up on the screen. But if it's a scanned image, meaning that the words aren't really text in the actual file, but they're actually scanned pictures of the text, then you're not going to be able to read that. That is not going to be accessible. And that's what ends up happening. The next type of material that a person might get would be something that the words have been OCR'd. Optical character recognition has occurred on the text. However, nothing has been done other than that. So the words are there, but the computer hasn't been given any kind of technology that would allow it to know which things should be read first. If it's columns, it might read straight across instead of reading down the column. You know, there's no information to help the computer know what to read. So that would be a non-tagged image. You know, that might work if it's just a book with a bunch of text and a big page, but it's not going to work very well, especially for textbooks where there are all kinds of elements that need to be identified and that the reader needs to know, you know, which part they need to be focusing on. And then the most accessible thing would be a tagged image. And I'm going to show you, do a quick demo later of all three of these so that you can see exactly what we mean. But a tagged image is going to be an image that has embedded bookmarks, tags, things that will help the computer know where the headings are, where the columns end, if there are tables, lists, and other boxes on the screen that need to be identified. So that would be a tagged image, and that would be the most accessible. I'm going to talk to you for a minute about the user experience. I think that's next.
Yes.
Okay. I have my PowerPoint on my little Braille note taker here. So, but it's not, you know, it's not running. Sandra's not controlling it. So if I get ahead, you all just stop me. The user experience. Okay. I've been blind since birth, so I'm the user and I've had the experience. Kevin was going to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the student perspective, and he's a lot closer to the age of a student than I am. So, but I still remember, you know, the student perspective. Nowadays, you know, you can go, and as I said, books, things have become a lot more accessible. You can go to, for example, the iBook store. You can buy a book, you can download it on your iPad or your iPhone, and you can read the book. And that's, I guess, one of the most accessible ways that we interact and that we use mainstream technology the same way that you would. We can read it using VoiceOver on our phones, which comes, you know, standard packaged with every iPhone. You could use it that way if you wanted to as well. But, you know, unfortunately, every piece of equipment out there has not caught up. And so, for example, I could go to Amazon. I can buy a book. I can read the description of the book. I can find out, you know, if it's the book I want. And, of course, because it's Amazon, they have a lot of books. I mean, they have really have a corner on the ebook market. And I can download that book onto my Kindle. But once it gets onto the Kindle, the chances of me being able to read it are going to be slim. And the reason for that, well, there are two reasons for it. Number one, the Kindle is not very accessible. It does have speech-to-text capability, but you do have to have assistance getting it up and running. So, you know, that's the first problem. But the second problem is that the books aren't always going to be accessible because it's not predetermined that they can have speech-to-text turned on. So I can, you know, read about the book, find the book, but reading the book makes it something that may be impossible. So I still have to use what we consider alternative methods to, you know, to access some of those types of materials. Of course, I can use Audible, which is a commercially available audiobook service, and I'm, you know, most people are members of that. But, you know, I still have to use services like the National Library Service for the Blind, where books are, where, you know, a very small number of books are recorded, pre-recorded for people who are blind. You don't get the bestseller list while it's on the bestseller list. You get it months later after they've gotten around to recording it. There are organizations that I can read on the internet, so that's one good thing. I can read the newspapers on the internet using my same screen reader, you know, so the experience has basically, you know, has increased. Things have gotten a lot better, but we have a long, long way to go before we have complete access to everything. Even with on the internet, as you know, if you go look at the newspaper, you don't get all the articles. You just get the ones that they've chosen to let you see.
Okay. Has anybody ever heard of alt text? No? Okay, a couple of you have. Okay. Basically, alt text is short for alternative text, and it's a description of the content of an image that would not normally be visible to somebody who has a print-related disability. So it describes the image so that it will tell somebody who maybe is visually impaired or who is blind what the image actually is. It's describing what the image is in text. And it's accessed through text-to-speech applications, like the screen readers that Tamara was talking about earlier. And what's good about it is that these descriptions help to give access to images such as graphs, charts, maps, photographs, whatever it is, to somebody who might have limited or no access to that information. Okay. Now, as authors, you probably have an idea of what images you want to use in your textbooks. Whether you're working with an artist or you're working with your editor and your publisher, there's probably an idea of what you want as content in your book. So it's really important to have alt text from you as a source, just because it can be reinterpreted by somebody else and it could be a different interpretation of what you originally wanted to convey. So alt text coming from the author directly helps to convey your intent, and the reader gets that information from the source. And alt text doesn't have to be long. It could be short. It could be sweet. It could be very much to the point. 150 characters or less is probably sufficient, similar to Twitter, very short. And then now Tamara's going to just talk about tactile graphics.
Right. A tactile graphic is going to be a graphic that is produced by a person who transcribes materials into Braille, and they have to reproduce some kind of depiction of the pictures that come in those same books. So what they do are what we call tactile graphics. And a tactile graphic is going to be extremely truncated compared to the graphic that you would have in your book. So, for example, you know, the first one that we have up is going to be a globe, and this is the original picture that was in the book. And this particular globe is kind of more of a simplified globe. So, but it has a lot of different information on it. Some of it may be important information. Some of it just may be information so that the reader knows it's a globe. But there's just all kinds of things that visually you can see on that globe. Now we have, the next slide is going to be a picture of the tactile graphic of that globe. And somebody, usually the Braille transcriber, has to make a decision as to what to leave off, because chances are they can't put everything on there. They have to abbreviate certain things. They can't put everything on the globe that you have. So they have to determine what is important and what isn't. And if they haven't looked at the text very closely, or if they're not very good at their job, or if they, you know, don't care, I mean, you may or may not get what's important and what isn't, because that really is something that is, it could be a subjective kind of decision, but You know, if you look at the text, you could probably figure out what would be the most important thing on the graphic, and you would depict those things. Sometimes graphics can be more than one page. The ones that we're showing you are actually one-page type graphics. And the next slide shows them together so that you can see, you know, the original, which is the one that the student saw who was looking at it with their eyes, and then a comparison of the one that the student is feeling. So then we have yet another showing the same examples where you have a graphic of a bar chart.
Yes, they're bar charts.
Okay. And here again, I mean, and this is important because in math, you know, the graphics are usually, most of the things on there are going to be important. They're not just pictures of maps or things like that. They usually are giving you information you need to do an equation. So, or to determine how, you know, what the answer is for that equation. And that same stuff would show up on standardized exams. It shows up in your final exam for the particular class that you're taking. You need to understand it for later use. So that, you know, the math graphics can be particularly important. With this, the original of this bar chart, you know, it has different colors so that the student is clear on exactly what, you know, what they're supposed to be seeing. If we move to the graphic that is tactile, the one that the student would be feeling, what they did on this one is they used different textures to represent the colors. And they don't even tell you that they represent colors, because the important part is to know that this is two different things. It's not so much that, you know, the color I think is just used for visual representation, but it's not that those colors matter necessarily. And then we have, again, a comparison of the two side by side. And we actually brought these tactile graphics. We thought we'd hand them out for you all to actually feel so that you could see and feel exactly what the student is feeling when they get handed a tactile graphic that they then need to look at and use, you know, to answer the same questions that the other students are answering. We have a master that we're going to hand out because it actually shows, probably gives you a better visual representation. And then we have a what we would call a copy. It's done on copy paper for people who are blind, and that one you could keep. But we need to get the master back, or else we can't go back. our transcribers will not allow us back in the office if we don't bring those back.
Okay, so are there any questions at this point?
Sure. Richard Hull. I'm editing an e-book series, and you've just opened my eyes to the inadequacy of what I'm doing. Because I have nothing like what you have presented already, even conceived in the series. So my question is, for someone who is desirous of becoming more supportive of students with visual disabilities and challenges, how, or any reader, what organizations would I turn to for assistance in transforming or producing a transform of what I have intended to publish simply as an e-text?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's several organizations that would be able to give you information. One of the things that AMAC does is that, you know, we actually do that. So we could assist you, consult with you, that kind of thing. You could also speak with NFB, National Federation for the Blind. They provide assistance to people and can probably provide you with some resources. American Foundation for the Blind would also be able to provide you with resources. American Printing House for the Blind would be able to provide you resources. They are the federally funded group that handles producing materials for students K through 12, and so they would be able to help you. Or, for example, National Braille Press, which is an independent nonprofit agency that also is a publisher of materials for people who are blind or visually impaired. Any of those would be able to help you. If you are in the California area, there's California National Institute for the Blind. So there's several that I could give you names of, and I'll be sure and give you my card, and we can definitely talk about that.
Yeah, I have a question. My name's Kevin, and I'm an author in human anatomy and physiology, and I have a question about these alt text issues. If I have a full page, very detailed anatomical drawing of the nervous system of the body, with the muscles behind it and the bones in between all of that, and maybe 50 labels on it, how can I have an alt text in the neighborhood of 150 words or even 15,000 words? Because that I wouldn't know where to begin, you know, even as the author, to describe that kind of an image.
With that kind of image, there's two things that would happen with that image. If someone were reading that book as an e-text, I imagine that the material that you're talking about in your actual text is going to, you're going to have to explain, you know, what those muscles do, what those, what the bone structure does. You have figures, and I mean, you have this, that, you know, you have all kinds of written material to support it. So someone wouldn't look at that picture and be able to get everything you would want them to get out of it. They would read the text, and then they would be able to look at the picture that would help them, is to assist them in understanding what you've written, right?
Yeah.
So thinking of it from that perspective, then the alt text might say detailed description of the human anatomy with three-dimensional coverage of bones, muscles, and nervous system. Okay, that's going to tell me that you've given them an excellent detailed picture and that I better make sure I'm reading the material very closely because I might be tested on it.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
See, and that wasn't a long description, but some person who is doing alt text that doesn't really know what they're doing might just put human body.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
That's not the same thing. Any other questions on that?
Maybe you're going to follow, maybe we'll follow up on this more at the end, but just to continue with that thread of thoughts, mm-hmm. are publishers starting to take this into account as they create e-texts? Is there any awareness of making that a part of the system of publishing instead of a separate organizational thing?
Some are. Some understand and realize that they have to address this issue, and partly because there's been lawsuits and threatened lawsuits and OCR complaints, and so some are taking it seriously. But what needs to happen is it needs to be, you know, it needs to be considered from all sides so that you know, if you all are aware of it as authors, you can say to your publishers, by the way, if you have to do alt text, let me know, or at least beware that that this might be happening to your text. I mean, you know, you may not have even thought about the fact that somebody might be redescribing the pictures that you so, you know, painstakingly selected. So, you know, that somebody might be, you know, trying to redescribe them and not necessarily doing a great job. We're going to talk a little bit later about some of the things that you might be able to do to assist. And not so much assist in always doing all the drafting, but at least to put some things in your contract that would at least be able to notify you if this is happening so that if you wanted to assist, you could.
I think that the earlier graphics, I guess that's what you call them, that you passed around, suggest to me, Kevin, that a possible solution to your particular example would be a series of overlays in which you would have layers bones and muscles and outer body and so forth that you could lift up and peel away and feel tactily. This reminds me a little bit about the transverse Mercator maps, which show proportional elevations and depressions of a mapped area. I don't see why something like that could not be incorporated. It would be a much thicker textbook, but could not be incorporated in your very excellent work.
Yeah, they will do that. They will do a multi-page graphic that has, like, for example, if it's a map that has a lot of things on it, they'll have to do just multi-page, and they'll do sections on each page. So there are very creative ways to do it. Sometimes they'll do it, you'll have an electronic text, but there'll be a tactile graphic book that might go along with it for tactile purposes. But some people, you know, aren't Braille readers and aren't tactile, so they have to use audio ways of doing things. So, you know, there's several ways to address it. But I think it's great that you're already thinking in terms of the different ways that someone might be able to recreate the need. What I want to do now is just bring up a couple of images. I'm going to do a very brief demo. I'm going to use JAWS, so my computer will be talking. I'm going to bring up some images that will, so you can see the differences between things that work well and things that are accessible and inaccessible. So first I will bring up JAWS.
JAWS for Windows is ready. PowerPoint slideshow dash left bracket.
Okay, what I'm going to do is first of all slow it way down. It's talking as fast as I like to read. You all will not understand what he's saying if he talks that fast. I'm going to make it more understandable, and I want you all to kind of give me a clue as to whether this works for you or not.
Slower, 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 slower.
Let's see if that might work. I'm going to bring up a scanned image, and this is what someone might get from, you know, a professor who's being very helpful but didn't realize that a scanned image wouldn't work, or, you know, just anybody that think that can create a PDF. They usually are creating a scanned image. They're not creating, you know, a text-based image. So I'm going to bring that up first. Okay, here it is.
Scan under line 978034463819-36.pdf-acrobat-professional. Scan page alert dialog. This page contains only an image of a scanned page. There are no text characters. Would you like to run character analysis?
Okay, so what it says is this page contains only a scanned image. There are no, there's no characters, and it's asking me if I want to run OCR on it because I have Acrobat Professional on here, and it will try to OCR it. I'm not going to run that so that you can see, because most people just have Acrobat Reader, and so they wouldn't even have that option necessarily. I'm not going to run it so that you can now see what happens, but before I even answer the question, I'm going to slow him down again.
Slow, 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 slower.
Okay, and I'm just going to tell it here, let's see.
Tab, OK button, tab, cancel button, to act, enter, processing, page 1 of 1, progress bar, read only, 100%, scan underline 978034638189-36.pdf-adobe-acrobat-professional, no links, alert, colon, empty document.
Told me the document's empty. In other words, there's nothing here for me. Nothing at all. It did give me the name first, and it will do that. It's reading the title. That's just an embedded thing that JAWS tends to do. So it read me the title, and then it just said alert, no text. So, you know, I can
alert, colon, empty,
move through it, but nothing's happening. It's just saying alert, alert, alert. I can't do anything with this. So that's it for that.
Alt F4, PowerPoint slideshow.
Okay, so now I'm going to go to
Windows key, desktop, folder view list.
What would normally come from the publisher is a untagged publisher file. So a publisher file that you would order from the publisher if you were a student is probably going to be, it's going to have text, but it's not going to be tagged, bookmarked, it's not going to have anything, any embedded images in it, or not images, any embedded code that would allow you to actually be able to navigate through the file. Your option is to read it straight through, top to bottom. You can go from one page to the other, but other than that, you're not really going to be able to do much with it except read it. So if you have things in it like tables, lists, different headings, or if you need to get to something in the middle of the page, you're not going to be able to really do that effectively. So it's not an effective file because of that. Let me bring that up.
Okay,
so I'm going to go ahead and click
Enter.
On this, and then I'll... Untact
under line 978034, no links, alert colon, document being processed. Slow, 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 slower, 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 slower. Part 1, the legal and social environment of business. Graphic E, protection of computer software.
See, what it's doing is this file is not formatted properly or anything, so I'm actually reading, as I was reading that word by word, it was one word on each line is letting me read it. It's actually acting as if there's only one word on each line. I'm going to actually go to another page so we can have something.
Alt Control N.
That'll do it.
212, part 1, the legal and social environment of business.
Okay, so now it's going really fast, but I think I can slow it down.
Slower. Gravity. 212, part 1, the legal and social environment of business. 212, part 1, the legal and social...
Slower.
Gravity. Protection of computer software and mass works. 25. Copyright protection of computer programs. 25. Protection of gravity. 212, part 1, the legal and social environment of business. 212, part 1, the legal and social environment of business. 212, part 1, the legal and social environment...
I can understand that, but I'm sure you can't. But trust me when I tell you that it's reading the text. But if I do an H, which is how I would check for headings...
No mixed heading.
It says no headings. If I do an L...
No mixed list.
No list. If I do C...
No mixed combo box.
It says there's no list combo box. I'm going to now go to another
control
page.
Control
actually
for
does
select
have...
Remove.
Those things on. What's happening is they're both talking.
See, users are desktop and tablet.
Why they're both talking, I don't know.
Gravity. Protection of computer software and networks.
So this one has...
No mixed heading. No mixed heading.
Well, actually, it's still saying no heading.
No mixed combo box.
No combo box, no boxes.
Table with 7 rows and 4 columns. No
table. Well, it does tell me that there's a table, but really it's not a table, it's a column. But it's saying it's a table because it thinks that... It's seeing it as a table because of the way it's, the columns are set up. So it's telling me that there's a table here. Okay.
List protection of computer software and mass works. List five items, 25. Copyright protection of computer programs, 26. Patent protection of programs.
Okay, so this is the same document, but this time it's tagged. So if I do...
List trademarks and service marks, heading level 3.
An H, it goes to the next heading.
1. Introduction, heading level 4.
Heading level 4.
No next heading.
No next heading because we're now at the end of the headings. So now I'm going to go to page 245, which does have all those things on it.
Control the page by going to page 283. Control the page by going to page 283.
Okay, and I'm on page 245. Now when I hit a T for table.
No next table.
It says there's no table because there wasn't really a table. It thought, you know, it was calling something else a table.
No more text after a block of links. No next heading. No next combo box. Imitating competitor will need to prevent competitors from using that mark. His model is your producer. There's nothing. No next list.
No next list. Let's go to page.
Control the page by going to page 283. Selection 45. Alert. Not only in the past, but also in the past.
Okay.
List of items. Give an example of how law protects privacy.
So this it just told me there's a list of 8 items.
No next table.
There's no tables.
No next heading.
There's no headings.
No next combo box.
And there's no combo boxes on this.
The family educational rights and private academic records private. What these are imposed.
So if you were had a student and you said, I want you to read, you know, the various pages, and you told them the pages, and then you said just concentrate on the information in this or that box or this or that piece of information, they would be able to do it with a tagged PDF, but they would not be able to do it with an untagged PDF. They'd have to read a lot more stuff, and they wouldn't know which stuff was the stuff you actually wanted them to concentrate on. You know, they could read the whole page, but they wouldn't know which was the material. So that's it for the demo. I'm not sure what you got out of that, but... Oh. She wants the PowerPoint back.
Declassification of law.
First, let me unload JAWS, because...
F4, the list law consists of a pattern of rules established by society and the government.
We're just going to take a quick break. She's going to reboot it. Okay, so while she's doing that, do y'all have any other questions about accessibility of materials or alt text or graphics or anything like that? Let me talk to you for a minute. I was going to talk, and this is further down in our PowerPoint, but I'll go ahead and do it now while she's bringing that up. A little bit about how authors can have an effect on what happens with your text, because you know I think that as authors, you know, we've talked to a few people, and you really don't have a lot of control once you write it and send it over and it's accepted by the publisher. There's not much you can do after that. So. You know, one thing you could do is within your contract, if you have an interest in just even knowing if your book is going to be made accessible or going to be made an ebook, you know, if you could be notified of that, if you could at least be given an option of having input into alt text or you know what may happen with it, that would be one way that you could start to you know have an effect. There are authors who actually. You know, require that their books be made accessible. The one that comes to my mind, because I'm not an author or anything, but the one that comes to my mind happens to be John Grisham, simply because all of his books are in Braille. He insists upon that. all of his books have been put in Braille.
Step under line, top left, PPTX-Microsoft, PowerPoint, slide, master slide, no selection, deselect an object, press tab.
Ever since day one,
no selection, deselect an object, press tab.
They've all been put in Braille. But, you know, that's maybe not something everybody has an option to do. The next thing you would want to do is make sure you educate yourself about what might be happening.
Slide show, left bracket, step underline, top left, PPTX-Microsoft, bracket, roll of authors, slide 19, roll of authors.
Like Kevin was asking about, what could be done with his book. I mean, just educate yourself about, the possibilities for your book. Okay? So I guess we'll go back to the PowerPoint, and then we'll get to these parts. We can skip it.
All right, so just going into the role of authors and how you can...
Author incentive slide, add notes.
Oh, she doesn't want y'all to hear...
A mode in JAWS. Quit JAWS dialog. Are you sure you want to quit JAWS? Press enter to quit now. Enter. PowerPoint slideshow. Dash left bracket.
I think he turned it down too, so.
Okay.
Yeah. JAWS has to be unloaded. Because JAWS actually changes the functionality of some of the keys sometimes. So you actually literally do have to turn it. You have to unload JAWS for her to be able to do it the way she usually does it.
Okay. So in terms of just some of the author incentives, why do you want to make your work more accessible to these students? Other than it just being a worthwhile endeavor, you're reaching an untapped audience. You're able to sell more to more people, helping students with disabilities access the information that you want to educate them with. And also, you're going to have more control on the alt text and how your text is interpreted.
And let me just throw in there that, reaching an untapped audience, it's also an audience that wants to read and wants the access. If you make your books accessible, people will buy them. Blind people will. Just because they're out there and accessible.
And then talking about structure and layout, which is probably something when you're writing your manuscripts and you're writing your textbooks, you're already taking into consideration. So this might just be a reminder for you. But, there's standard and there's non-standard text. Standard being logical reading order, the layout on the page makes sense. How to read the information on a page, as opposed to what we're calling a three-ring circus. We borrowed that term from one of our advisory members. But a three-ring circus typically would be a page layout that has so many elements on a page that you don't know where to start. You don't know what information is important to read, what maybe you can skip. It could have multiple columns. It could have call-out boxes, sidebars, figures, that kind of thing. So when we talk about structural layout, it's really important to have files that are constructed well and has as much structure as possible. And when I talk about structure, I'm referring to like the hierarchy of your information, heading levels and lists and tables and that sort of thing. And ideally, structure should be done at the author stage and included earlier in your workflow so that that format can be transferred across formats. I was going to do a demo of Word, and I can try to do that pretty, just very briefly to show you how to do use the built-in style sheets in Word, as well as adding alt text to a graphic, and maybe adding comments. Okay, so this is actually the handout that we're going to be giving out later today. When I created this document, I used the preset style sheets that are in Word. So if you're, this is using Word 2010, on the Home tab, which we're on right now, there's a little styles pull-down box. So if you look at this title, which is 2012 TAA Conference, and you pull down the styles, you can see that title was a style applied for this text. And then also, going down here, you've got the heading level. So that's a heading one level text. Another way to apply text would be to go to the styles box and say apply styles. And then applying styles basically is selecting the content or the text in your Word document, and then pulling down and applying the appropriate style that you want to put to that text. Now, in terms of creating alt text or including alt text on an image, you would select the image. You can right-click on it. And because this is a chart, it's saying format chart area. If it was a picture, it would say format picture. So you select the format chart, and there's an alt text right there. And as you can see, there's a place for you to put a title in. There's a place for you to put a description in. And what I ended up putting in the description was the actual percentage breakdowns, so that if somebody's using a screen reader and wants to hear that information, it's available to them.
And so the importance of that is that when you're using a screen reader, whether you're using it as a person who has LD or a person who's blind, if you're reading a document that has these things in it, the screen readers are designed to read all of that to you. This is all embedded code that they pick up.
Right. Okay, and in terms of adding comments, that's just if you have some control over how your book is laid out, you know, if you're either self-published or maybe you're working with a compositor and editor, and you have some control over that. You know, maybe adding comments to, you know, there's a certain image that really needs to be on the same page as this paragraph. Putting comments in your Word document or when you're submitting your material to let the compositor know that this information all needs to be together as opposed to being on the next page where it doesn't make sense. So that's something also that can be added in Word, probably just by adding comments in the, you know, the add comments feature. And again, just to reiterate alt text, you know, supplying it yourself rather than letting somebody else do it just makes the information just more accurate. And then Tamara had already talked about accessibility in contracts. So we're going to continue. Are there any questions at this point?
I have a question about my elderly aunt is almost now completely blind, and up until very recently she was able to use a magnifier. Is there some way to get this kind of software for someone who is, you know, more recent, who has become blind over the years? Is it available just to purchase somehow?
Yes, it's very available to purchase, but that one thing that popped up, NVDA, that's a free download software, and it works fine, so you could get that for free. You can just download it. All of the software is available. There's also equipment available to allow her to be able to read commercially available books or National Library Service for the Blind books. She does have to prove that she is visually impaired if she wants to read some of the stuff, because, you know, they don't want to have people using it who don't qualify as blind, but there, I can also give you my card and give you plenty of information about what may be available in your area and what's available in general.
Okay, yes, you have a question.
Yeah, this is Kevin again. You were talking about the structure of the text and so on, and something I've been doing in my books over the last few editions is trying to working with college reading and ESL people, trying to make the book more accessible to those groups and chunking things up into smaller subheadings and so on. So when you talk about structure, I realize the need for some structure. My goal is up to a point, more headings the better. Is that something that would carry through to what you're talking about as well, or am I kind of going off track here?
When you say, Tamara?
Yeah, I think that would. I mean, I agree, more headings the better, because the more headings you put in, the more navigation I can do.
Okay.
So, you know, if you put in headings, I can, if I'm reading something, I want to jump to the next paragraph, I can do that, or if I want to jump to the next heading, or if you've already, you know, if you've done an outline and then you write it with that outline as that outline, then that really helps I think all readers, but in particular the JAWS user, is going to be able to navigate much better.
A kind of a follow-up question to that is, you know, normally in our books we don't go past three levels of headings, occasionally a fourth level.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, if we get into more levels than that, is that something that would mess up your program, your screen reader and stuff? Or?
It doesn't mess it up at all. If you want to do more, you can. You don't need to do more than three. Usually when we're converting materials, we do the first three levels. The first three levels is kind of the standard.
I see. Okay.
So,
thank you.
All right, so I'm going to give you an overview of the STEP project, which stands for the Student eRent Pilot Project. Our core message is basically STEP is an e-textbook rental program offering cost-effective textbooks that all students can read, and we put all in quotes. We actually produced a video earlier this year. I'm not sure that we're going to have time to actually view it today, but the handouts include the link to the YouTube video, so you can watch it at your leisure. But some key points that are from that video as well as about the project It is a U.S. Department of Education grant project. It falls under FIPSE, which stands for the Fund for the Improvement of Post-Secondary Education, and it's under their pilot program for course materials. And the call for proposals basically was to offer the option for students to rent their books so that they can save money. And that was the purpose of the grant. STEP is a partnership between the Alternative Media Access Center, Access Text Network, as well as CourseSmart, which I'm sure most of you have heard of CourseSmart. But if not, it's an e-rental. It's an online e-rental program. And students can save an average of 50% or more by renting as opposed to buying a new print hard copy book. It's a virtual online bookstore, again, through CourseSmart.com. CourseSmart also offers distribution agreements with college bookstores across the nation, which means that students can actually physically go to their campus bookstore and rent an e-textbook. Basically, it's going by, you know, they go, they look for the book they need, and then it's a shelf card that they would bring to the cash register. And the good thing about being able to go to the bookstore, they can actually use their financial aid at the bookstore to do that. Again, we offer universally accessible electronic textbooks, which means that we're giving an equal opportunity for students with print-related disabilities to participate in a mainstream textbook program as well as save money. Some additional resources. Tamara had talked about educating yourself. I don't know if you had finished.
I did.
Okay. She went through the points. But some of the additional resources that we wanted to provide, again, this is going to be on the handouts. There's the Accessible Publishing Best Practice Guidelines for Publishers. Has a really thorough write-up about accessibility and what publishers and just people in the publishing industry can do to make textbooks more accessible or just print information in general. There's also the AIM Commission, the Advisory Commission on Accessible Instructional Materials. And then again, our partners are the Access Text Network and the Alternative Media Access Center. Now, our contact information is on this page, also in the handouts. But basically, our website is step.godtech.edu. And then you can also email us if you have any questions or you want to follow up with us. Think of anything after the presentation at step@godtech.edu. And we also have social media. We're using social media. So if you wanted to connect with us on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, please do so. We encourage that. And again, we have our video up on YouTube. Do we have any other questions?
I'm working on a writing skills textbook for the developmental level college student. And it's a hands-on approach. We do tons of kinesthetic learning and acting out parts of sentences, parts of speech. And I've worked with a number of deaf and hearing impaired students. So I've included parts in the book where whenever we talk about read something out loud, you know, we'll also include some tips on what deaf and hearing impaired students could do from what they and their interpreters have advised me so far. But I'm wondering, with a workbook format, how this might work for e-rentals, not e-rentals, textbook rentals. I guess you're mainly talking about e-rentals at this point.
We're talking about electronic textbooks.
So are workbooks for both math and English, are they just sort of out of the question? Do you have to have a separate workbook for the actual student work and then a main book with the concepts?
I don't think they're out of the question. I think it depends, you know, if it's a workbook where they're actually doing work in the book, and then they, you know, they've written in the book and I guess maybe would have it as a resource for later, or, you know, had pages that they had to use, then they wouldn't be able to rent it. But if it were a book where the material was just available to them and they were reading it and doing the exercises, they could still rent that.
One thing I'm wondering is if for more universal access, it might make more sense to design a workbook with a separate section for the exercises that would actually be set up to be completed online just as easily as in handwriting, right?
You could definitely do that as long as the online sections were accessible.
Well, that's what I meant.
508 compliant. You know, that the problem, you know, like for example, the one that comes to mind and the one that probably everybody knows about is My Math Lab. It's one of those, you know, things that are online that you're supposed to go online and do your exercises. And I know they're in the process of trying to make that more accessible, but, you know, traditionally it's not accessible. So students who are blind that take math classes and have that My Math Lab that they have to do as well aren't able to do that alone. They have to either get a reader to do it for them because it's not, you know, it's not accessible, because it's usually what happens with things on the web is that they're trying to make sure that they embed DRM. And once you put that in, oftentimes that eliminates the ability for the screen readers to work.
What's DRM?
It's digital rights management, so that people can't print it or copy it. But with the exercises, oftentimes they use Flash and all kinds of interactive things that don't work well with speech. And so those are the things that keep some of those things from working as well.
Thanks. A lot to think about.
Well, thank you so much for coming to our session. Sorry that the demo didn't quite work well.
How Authors Can Help Students with Disabilities is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.